giant roadblock that keeps me sitting here wanting to link our fingers but unable to hold her hand or any other part of her.
Great. So you'll tell him we're collaborating and he'll be stoked.
Definitely. He's pretty busy with meetings, but I'll catch up with him in a day or so.
Were you guys close growing up?
I might as well quiz her about her relationship with him. It'll keep the issue front and center, right where I need it.
Definitely. He looked out for me, was always weighing in on family talks with Mom and Dad. He took it quite seriously, like what school I should go to, what sports I should play, what classes I should take, and so on.
Did you like that?
It was eye-roll-inducing as a tween, but looking back, I love that he always had my best interests at heart, that he wanted to be involved. My parents are like that, too. They even had matching jackets from my cheerleading and dance team days and used to wear them to my competitions. Now they break them out whenever I come over. They're still together after 35 years.
Goals. That's awesome. And they live here?
They do. I'm having dinner with them tomorrow night.
That makes me ridiculously happy. Sure, Tracy was close to her dad, but they both always badmouthed her mom. That should have been a big red flag. Nice to see London likes and respects both her parents. Mine live here, too. I'm seeing them next week.
Birds of a feather,
she says in a soft voice that hints she likes that we've got the same plumage. Soon, we reach our stop, and as we exit the station, I raise my face to the fading sun. Here we are at the end of another almost date, saying goodbye to the woman I like a whole hell of a lot. Fate, you can fuck off. I walk her home, and when we reach her house, Mr. Darcy is outside cavorting with two guys I recognize as her friends from the club, the ones who look like they could be on the cover of any celebrity magazine in the world.
Do you live with Tom Ellis and John David Washington?
I know, right? Everyone in LA is ridiculously beautiful. Tom Ellis is Eli, and John David Washington is Nate.
The A-list lookalikes are watering the lawn, only in LA. As London's shoes slap the sidewalk, the butterscotch-colored chihuahua mix loses his mind with glee, darting over to her at the speed of sound.
My little love, she says, scooping him up and peppering him with kisses as he wags his tail like it's a propeller.
She clutches the dog in her arms as she gestures to her friends.
Guys, this is Teddy. Teddy, this is Nate and Eli.
Nate arches a teasing brow and meets London's gaze.
Ah, the guy you had dinner with last night who kisses like a rock star?
Beet. Red. Wait, that's inaccurate. She turns every shade of red in the color wheel, and I want to thump my chest.
London narrows her eyes. You're evil, and we're not friends anymore.
Eli laughs and drapes an arm around his partner.
Nate, love, did you forget?
She also called him the total hottie with the sexy voice and yummy eyes and lips that she couldn't get enough of.
Eli flashes a devilish grin at London.
Yup, Eli is pure Tom Ellis at his Lucifer best, and he sounds like Ellis too, with a proper British accent and all.
Nate elbows him.
Look at you, showing off with your perfect memory of how London described the man.
London points at them each in turn.
You're both officially out of my will.
The guys laugh, then Eli says to me,
Nice to meet you, Teddy.
We exchange hellos, and London offers to drive me home.
Plus, I need to escape from these two before they serve up more of my secrets.
Or, before you do, Eli adds as London grabs her keys from her pocket. Her car is parked on the street, so she opens the back door, tucks Mr. Darcy into a dog car seat, then buckles him in. Yeah, that's not totally fucking adorable. I get into the passenger seat and she drives me to my place, pulling into the lot of my condo.
Thanks again, I say, unbuckling my car seat.
You're most welcome, she says, unclipping the dog. He doesn't like to stay in the back seat unless I'm driving.
And he should have everything he wants.
You get me. Thank you, she says as the dog folds himself into a dog ball on her lap, looking like a contented prince.
Well, he is in her lap. Also, can we rewind to that moment on your front lawn? I ask, a smirk tugging at my lips.
I don't know. Can we? She tosses back.
So I kiss like a rock star? She rolls her eyes.
Well, yeah. You were there last night. Don't you think you kiss like a rock star?
I'm more interested in what you think of my kissing. And I'm so not thinking about kissing you again, I lie. What I'm really not thinking about is about work. Or her brother. Or the tangled webs we weave. I'm not even thinking too much about the fact that I need to jet in 20 minutes to get to the radio station in time. Because when the woman you're into tells her buds she can't get enough of you, everything else falls by the wayside. The second she removes her glasses, the moment shifts. I take her face in my hands and give in again. As the sun dips toward the ocean, I forget about all the roadblocks, because I'm the guy she told her friends about. I like being that guy right now. Because that guy has his hands on London. I bring her closer, clasp harder, and slide my tongue across her lips. Her soft, lush, fantastic-tasting lips. Especially when they part for me, when she lets out a needy murmur and draws me closer, even with her dog in her lap. Following her cues, I deepen the kiss, with lips, with hands, with contact, moving closer in the cramped space of the car. I slide a hand through her hair as the moment amps up, and we kiss harder, hungrier. It's next-level kissing, teeth nipping at lips, tongues exploring, bodies inching toward more delicious, devouring territory. Her hands travel to my stomach, sliding under my shirt and up my abs to my pecs. She stops there, curling them over my chest, but I don't want to stop. I want to bring her inside my home, undress her, and explore her. Except those lines are so much riskier than this one. This one in the car, in a parking lot. This one that can only go so far. Because I can't go too far. Or I'll do something stupider. For now, stupid is enough. Stupid, like pretending this fantastic, mind-numbing kiss doesn't break the rules we set last night. I stay here, my hands roping through her hair, my tongue tangoing with hers, her scent going to my head. I don't want to end the kiss, and I don't think she does either. But a small, soft tongue licks my face. And it's not hers. I laugh and we break apart, panting, turned on, and totally cracking up about the dog getting in on the action. So we're just going to pretend that was like an extension kiss I offer after we catch our breath. Of yesterday's? Exactly. And it won't happen again, she says, intensely serious. It absolutely won't. And I won't be thinking of undoing this shirt, I say, unclicking her seatbelt and tugging lightly at the soft cotton, sliding my hand under it, letting my fingers trace her skin. She gasps as I journey across her soft stomach, savoring the feel of her flesh for the first time. My fingers are on a mission. Slide higher, travel farther, discover the lush lands of London. Ah, hell. What's one more kiss? With my hand firmly on the pert mound of her breast, I return to her lips and kiss her harder, my head a hazy, static blur of lust and desire. My body hums with the need to crank the seat back, pull her on top of me, and say fuck everything so I can fuck her. I tug at her waist, gripping her hip, yanking her close. London slides on top of me, straddling me, and I run my hands up her back, hauling her in for a hot, full-body kiss. I want to spend the rest of the night with her like this, on top of me, here in her car, our bodies grinding. My hands travel down to her ass, gripping those tight, firm cheeks and dragging her closer. She rocks against the ridge of my erection, and my bones vibrate with lust, my brain going hazy with desire. She breathes out hard, then kisses harder, pressing and pushing. London is hungry and confident, and it's so damn sexy. I rub against her as her breathing grows more erratic, like maybe, just maybe, she could come like this. As soon as that tantalizing thought flicks through my head, I imagine London's noises, her expressions, the telltale signs that she's close. Will I be lucky enough to discover those signs? Will they become part of my London lexicon? I'd like to know them all. Especially since this kiss in the front seat of her car has gone from 0 to 60 in seconds, and I want to see how much further it can go. I run a hand along her arm, and she feels like fur. What the hell? I yank apart from London to find Mr. Darcy pumping her arm. I groan. Mr. Darcy, you naughty boy. She grabs him, but he's still humping air as she returns to the driver's seat. I have no choice but to laugh. I'm pretty sure I'm going to die of busting a gut, and London might too, because she is slumped against the steering wheel, gasping for air when the dog finally stops moving his doggy hips. I forgot to tell you, my dog's breed is actually Horn. London, all dogs are horns, but yours seems to be the rare subbreed, Cockblocker. Though maybe we needed his Kissus Interruptus. She brings her hand to her face. I know we're not supposed to be doing that, but you're irresistible. She juts out her chin, owning it, then strokes the horn dog. Thank you, Mr. Darcy, for being a cockblocker. She drops a kiss onto his soft head, and he lets his tongue loll out. Yeah, thanks, I think. I say with a laugh, then I turn serious. But really, I should behave. I should too. No matter how irresistible you are. This is a big chance for me in my career, and I've worked hard, so I will not be distracted by your lips. I'll try not to let them get in the way of yours again. Thanks. I'd appreciate that, she says with a smile. Let's make a pact. No more rogue kissing. I offer her a hand. She takes it and shakes. We will have each other's backs. Focus on work and on taking Edge to the next level. For both of our careers. All rogue kissing must end. I go inside, feed my dog, and take him for a walk before I head to the station, weirdly grateful that her dog saved my ass. But kind of ungrateful, too. Because holy fuck. That kiss. Those hands. That woman.
Chapter 13. An hour later.
Emery, where's my full report?
Olive, because we're betting you caved. Drinks are on me if I'm wrong.
London, and if you're right?
Drinks are on you. Ubs.
I'm not paying for drinks at your bar, Liv.
You don't have to, Dancing Queen. We're at Speakeasy. It's maybe a mile from your house. Get your cute butt over here and tell us everything about your elbow-licking work-work-work-non-date.
If you insist. I just finished walking my main man, so I'll see you in 30.
Give us a hint, though. Did you cave again?
Does kissing count as caving?
On every planet, woman. On literally every planet.
Then drinks are on me. And I'm hoping the willpower will be on the two of you, because I need it, friends. Desperately. Give me some of yours.
Activates pep talk gene. Prepares to impart epic advice and willpower.
We will not let you fail. Your career goals are too important to be distracted by hot lips. Think of us as your life coaches. Prepare for all sorts of wisdom and wine.
3 hours later. That was mostly wine, not wisdom. You spent the whole time asking what I liked about him and encouraging me to see him when I'm done with this work project. You suck.
We love you too.
We can't help it if we're problem solvers.
Making plans for when we aren't working together won't solve a thing. He's so not available for so many reasons. Make me stop thinking about him.
I've got this. Have I told you about this new audiobook I picked up where the heroine is into threesomes?
How exactly will threesomes help my cause? My dog already tried to have a threesome with Teddy and me.
Threesomes won't help, but books will. Just listen to this hot tamale and it'll take your mind off the guy you can't have and won't see again because you're going to be such a good girl. Here's a snippet from Dax Long, my fave narrator.
You can take it, kitten. You can handle both of us at the same time. That's right. Just relax. You feel us now?
Ugh, he sounds like Teddy, not helping.
Teddy sounds like my favorite audiobook narrator? I'm so jelly now.
Good night, crazy girl.
Good night, dancing queen.
Chapter 14. It's Thursday night. We have 3 hen parties in the building, and Archer is like a general giving his troops our final marching orders. All right, gentlemen, the Rothman party is already seated, he says as he paces the dressing room backstage. That bride-to-be is an entertainment executive named Bloom, and she's wearing a sash that says, "My friends made me wear this." She's a good friend of one of my sister's roomies. I almost ask Nate or Eli, but I catch myself and zip my lips because I shouldn't know her roomies. I keep my insider knowledge of London's life locked up airtight as Archer continues. The maid of honor tells me Bloom has a thing for Aussie men. Sam, you know what to do. Play it up. No worries, mate, Sam says, doing his best down under accent. Even though I won't be the one up there doing my best Hugh Jackman impression, Teddy will. Someone has to do the talking.
And someone has to have the moves, Sam says.
And we all have a division of labor to keep the show moving, says Archer. Then we have Mallory and her guests at the bar, and she happens to love firemen.
I've got a hose right here for her,
Carlos offers with a pump of his built-like-a-marine hips. He has close-cropped brown hair to match, and the look works for the job. Archer rolls his eyes, and holy hell, they're the same fucking color as London's. I'm not okay with that. Keep it classy, he says. This is a review, not a strip club.
I tell my boyfriend the same thing whenever he gets jelly about me bearing it all, Carlos says.
You don't bear it all, Archer says.
I know, but I like to keep him on his toes.
And I'm not thinking about London's eyes anymore. Then we have the Flashmans. They'll be arriving in around 30 minutes. Bride's name is Victoria, and Miss Victoria loves a man in uniform. Carlos licks his lips.
Me too.
Again, Carlos, Archer says.
What? It's true. I mean, have you seen those hot cop videos?
No, I have not, Archer says.
Well, try them sometime.
That earns him another eye roll. Another well-deserved eye roll.
Wait.
Stanley cuts in, raising his hand like he's in class.
Are we doing the handcuffs number or the soldier number? Which men in uniform are we talking about? Because there are a lot of uniforms out there in the world. Postal workers have uniforms too.
Yes, Stanley, we know your day job is delivering mail, Sam says.
And his night job is delivering mail,
Carlos says with a salacious wink. Archer slow claps. Yes, puns are always entertaining, but back to business, he turns to me. You got everything, Teddy? Hot accents, hot hoses, Carlos likes cops and playing jealousy games, Stanley delivers all the packages, you enjoy homophones, it's all in my notes. I rattle it off at a steady clip without missing a beat. Also, yes, I have music for that. Sam, Stanley, Carlos, I need a ton of energy out of you three tonight. Keep it classy, but a little dirty, like a proper martini should be, Archer says. The four of us laugh, but the chuckles do nothing to take the edge off the tension in every cell in my body. It's been 3 days since I last saw London, and I'm not sure if Archer knows we've hung out. Has she told him yet that we're working together? Does he know we had ice cream? You've got this, guys, Archer says, giving us his go-team-go grin, which twists my stomach. Why the hell can't he be an asshole? That would make my life so much easier. Though, not really. Who wants to work for a dick? Which means, rock, meet hard place, I am in you. 10 minutes later, the lights dim and I lure the crowd in with a fucking awesome Australian accent as Men at Work's Down Under begins to play.
G'day, ladies, and welcome to Edge. We found our first act of the evening out back. Please give it up for Crocodile Hump Me.
Sam struts on stage in skin-tight dungarees and a wide-brimmed hat, which he tosses to our first bride of the night, Bloom.
And like that, we find our rhythm as the rest of the guys join him on stage for the dance number. My nerves disappear as I let all thoughts of London and Archer fade away. I focus on the show and giving the crowd what they want. And the next few hours fly by. When the guys finish their Top Gun-themed grand finale, complete with aviators, bomber jackets, and little else, I throw on the post-show playlist and head backstage to check in. With a look of terror in his eyes, Sam beckons me over.
Dude, boss wants to see you.
The floor falls out from under me. Oh, shit. He found out about London. She told him we kissed more than once. Once can be forgiven. Once is an error, but twice is on purpose. He's protective. He's going to fire me. Because rogue kissing is not acceptable. I shouldn't have crossed the line. With nerves frayed to the edge, I begin the death march to his office.
Do you think he knows?
Sam whispers, his voice thin with worry. He probably has a camera in London's car. Brothers do that, right? Maybe he saw me kissing her in her car the other day.
That's normal. I bet that sounds exactly like what he'd do.
He smacks my arm.
Seriously, do you think she told him you're banging her?
I snap my gaze to him.
I'm not banging her.
But you want to.
But I didn't.
There's a thin line between kissing and banging. I stare at him like he's grown antlers.
It's not a thin line. It's a thick one. A huge one. A highway median-sized one. There are a ton of lines between kissing and banging.
All amazing lines, Sam says, suddenly on my side again.
None of which I've crossed.
I hiss as I turn the corner, the sound of Archer's laughter drifting into the hall and gutting me.
Good luck. I'll say I knew you when,
Sam says, cringing.
I can't watch horror movies, so I've got a jet.
I've never been a fan of scary films either. But seems I bought this ticket, and now I'll have to face what's on the big screen.
Chapter 15.
I walk the plank into Archer's office and then stop, my eyes all but springing out of my head like a cartoon character's. London is here. She's standing next to Archer, checking out a picture on his phone. She jerks her gaze over to meet mine and tries to say something with her eyes. Like maybe she's pointing to my pocket. My phone? Did she send me a message? I didn't check my phone. I'll have to improvise.
Teddy, I have a bone to pick with you,
Archer says, a serious glint in his eyes.
And that's the end of my job. The end of paying my bills. The end of my condo.
I'll be out on the street with Bowie tomorrow. I gulp, but say nothing.
Isn't it time for you to fess up? He asks, still staunchly serious.
London rolls her eyes.
Archer, dramatic much?
He gives her a look.
I could say the same to you, Missy.
Oh my God, you're not Dad. Don't call me Missy.
I can't tell if she's laughing at him, me, or whatever was on his phone.
God, I hope it was a cat gif.
May she please have been laughing at a cat gif. I don't move. I stand there, waiting for the guillotine. It's coming. 3, 2, 1. Archer gestures to the gorgeous woman I've already kissed, more than once.
This is my sister, London.
Yes, we've met, I blurt out.
Why did I just serve that up?
Because that's what almost dead men do.
Don't you have something to tell me?
Archer asks pointedly. I kissed your sister and it was fucking awesome. Then I kissed her again and it was more awesome. Instead, I shrug. It's all I got.
London points at Archer.
You need to stop.
She looks at me.
He's being an annoying big brother.
Archer laughs, drapes an arm around London, then jams his knuckles into her hair, rubbing affectionately hard. And yeah, I can't kiss her again. Ever. Because he's such a big brother. And she's such a little sister. And this is such a big mess.
She told me she enlisted you to help her develop the routine to show the partners. That's an awesome idea.
Archer grins, looking from her to me.
Such a great idea. I wish I'd thought of it myself.
What? He's not canning me for kissing his sister? He's not raking me over the coals for grazing his sister's rack? I can breathe again. She's brilliant. I'm telling you, she is brilliant, Archer says with obvious pride. She is. She's completely brilliant, I say, grateful to be able to tell the truth. This is why I hate mixing business with pleasure. I don't want to lie. Juggling multiple stories is not my jam. I don't even like jam. I'm more of a peanut butter guy. And I don't want to risk my job. I keep talking so I don't do other things with my mouth, like seal it to hers. The whole idea is brilliant. What you have planned for the club, adding more dancing, some new numbers, I bet it'll draw even more crowds, I say, leaning into the vision. It's important to broaden our reach and explore new markets. Great time to be expanding, too. Exactly. It's like you can read my mind. I only hope he can't read my mind, because if he could, it would look like a spilled bag of Scrabble tiles that spell, I really like your sister and I need to get the fuck out of here. Because my brain is at war with my body, twin desires tugging me in opposite directions. I want to tell Archer I have feelings for his sister and get everything out in the open. I want to run away and pretend this meeting never happened. But before I can do any of those things, Archer chimes in again. Have you two ironed out a set list for her new material? You should get together ASAP to discuss what might work best. If this goes well, the owners will want to get this up and running stat. Yes, this is brilliant. At least he knows I'm hanging out with her. Oh, wait. Hanging out with her is what tempts me to touch her all the fuck over. What the hell have I gotten myself into? Except Archer got me into it. So now I need to get myself through this. I need to meet her someplace safe, someplace that won't tempt me. And I know exactly where that is. What if we meet here during the day, I suggest. There is zero that is tempting about this joint. Or you could meet at the radio station. Weren't you telling me that it has a great digital collection and speaker setup? Yeah, and it has a fucking couch, too. Thanks a lot, Archer. I gulp and then fasten on a smile. Yes, perfect. Excellent. Now, I need to chat with Carlos and Stanley about a booking for tomorrow night. Sure enough, those guys are just outside and head into his office as I leave. On my way down the hall, I check my phone to find a text from London sent an hour ago. Heads up, I'm at the club. Archer loves the idea of us collaborating. Yay. Yay. So much not yay. I have to ignore this powder keg of feelings I have for London, because this is about work. This can only be about work. I open the door to my car when the unmistakable sound splits my eardrums. Shrieking. Squealing. Then a woman's voice.
Oh my God, you are just the guy I wanted to see.
That doesn't sound like the opening line of an axe murderer who's about to hack you to pieces in a parking lot. At least, I hope not. And the woman, click-clacking across the parking lot in a black dress and white sash, isn't wielding an axe, just a tiara. So odds are good I'll end the night with my limbs still attached. Bloom, the entertainment exec bachelorette, charges at me in a feat worthy of a new Olympic sport, rushing across concrete in high heels while smashed. Come to think of it, running anywhere in high heels should be an Olympic sport, because that's world-class athletic prowess, wasted or not. 5 seconds of ear-piercing shrieks later, she slams her hands down on my shoulders.
DJ Insomnia, I was hoping to catch you.
I have no idea what she's talking about, but I go with it. Cool, that's me, DJ Insomnia, your first choice to make a party last. What can I do you for? She flicks a strand of dark hair off her cheek, her lip gloss smeared, the scent of margaritas swirling around her like it's her new perfume.
You're never going to believe this. I have the worst news ever. The worst of all the worst news that was ever delivered anywhere.
That doesn't sound very good. I say dryly, waiting to see where this conversation is going. My guess is wedding town, because the rest of the bridal party marches across the parking lot to flank their bridal leader in what feels like a Reservoir Dogs meets bridesmaids moment.
But see, it's not the worst news, because my gals and I, we were discussing it, and we texted Nate, and we had the best idea. All of us. It's the best idea ever.
She takes a tequila-scented pause.
Be my Obi-Wan.
I arch an inquiring brow. Is this a you're-my-only-hope request? Synchronized shrieking commences.
OMG, he knows what I mean!
The maid of honor jumps up and down. A bridesmaid claps.
If you could be my Obi-Wan, I would just kiss you. I mean, I won't kiss you because I totally love my husband. Well, he's not my husband yet. He's going to be my husband in 3 days, and I'm not going to kiss anybody else. But if I did, it would be you, as long as you tell me that you can do one thing for me.
What would that thing be?
My DJ backed out of my wedding. He booked a shampoo commercial, and it shoots this weekend. It's a national, so obvs, he can't miss it.
I feel my luck changing on a dime. I can guess what's coming next from Bloom, and in 3, 2, 1, it arrives.
And Nate said London told him you also do weddings, so would you please DJ at my wedding this Sunday?
There is only one answer. Yes. Chapter 16. I meet with Bloom Friday morning at Dr. Insomnia's Tea and Coffee Emporium, not only because I like the name, but because it's in Silver Lake, between both of us. Over a vanilla latte for her and a black coffee for me, we review her picks for the first dance, the dance with her father, and the groom's dance with his mom. She also rattles off all her favorite numbers and her never-ever-play-at-my-wedding list.
No Macarena, no Every Breath You Take, and no My Heart Will Go On, she says, counting off on her fingers.
Because it's cheesy, because it's a stalker song, and because no one wants to think of Leonardo DiCaprio dying. The bride-to-be's grin is massive.
It's like it was meant to be, you DJing my wedding.
Kismet, I say, feeling great about this opportunity. Glad I could help out. She gives me the rest of the venue and timeline details, and I tell her I'll see her on Sunday. When I hop into my car, my phone buzzes with a text. Apparently, I'm Pavlov's dog, because the possibility that it might be from London has me swiping the screen faster than usual. But I've got too much riding on my career to get sidetracked now, especially with new opportunities like Bloom's wedding in my future. I'll be friendly and businesslike if it's London. But my mom's name pops up on the screen. Mom.
Ready when you are.
Since I haven't heard from her in a few days, this text must be for someone else, so I use this as an excuse to call.
Hi, Teddy. Good to hear from you.
Question, Mom, ready for what? Chess? Mahjong? Key party?
Oops, did I send that to you? I meant to text your father. We're brunching. Day date.
You text him even though you live in the same house?
We're a modern couple. Don't be so surprised, we know how to text.
I shake my head. That wasn't the surprise, it was that you didn't just yell up the stairs.
We like to text.
Do I hear a hint of coyness in her voice? Okay then, carry on.
We will. We like to text about a lot of things.
I cringe, even though my parents have always been a touchy-feely couple, which I truly don't mind, I just don't require details. Mom, I don't need to know that.
Hush, you weren't made in a test tube.
Still don't need to know that you and Dad like to text.
I didn't say what we texted about, she says, all faux demure.
Yes, but I got the picture. She scoffs.
We don't send pics. That's too risque. Please tell me you don't send dirty pics to women.
Mom!
You're still my son, and I'll still look out for you.
I don't send dirty pics. I'm not even seeing anyone.
That's a shame. We can try to find a nice girl to bring to the cages on Monday for batting practice.
I groan. The last thing I want is a blind double date with my parents. Sure, I love them, and I get a kick out of going to Dad's softball games where Mom brings him orange slices like she did for me when I was a kid. But a blind date? No thanks. Call me crazy, but seeing the two of you is enough for me. And do me a favor, Mom.
Sure.
Double check before you send me a text meant for Dad. She takes a beat, then says,
Think before texting. Those are some words to live by.
Words to live by indeed. And I do just that all day as I resist the urge to text London. I also keep my eye on the prize while working at Edge that night. Bills fly across the stage, women cheer, the music pounds. and the tips are the best they've ever been. It's a great Friday night. As I make my way out of the club, Archer's behind the bar working on his laptop, probably tallying up receipts. He tips his chin in my direction. I heard the news. I flinch, my skin prickling with nerves. Is he toying with me like he did with London? I toss out a curveball. That the Dodgers are leading the division with 1 month to go? Please tell me he's talking about baseball. That is indeed excellent news, but I meant about Bloom. Is he pissed I'm doing business with a customer? That's not against the rules, though. Plus, Archer knows about my side hustle plans. He's never had an issue with it before. You heard about her wedding? I ask carefully, since I'm not sure what's coming next. One of her friends forgot her phone, so they came back in last night, and Bloom was talking about having nabbed you last minute for her wedding. That's great. Good to see you growing your business. I breathe a sigh of relief. I'm stoked. I met with her earlier today about the music she likes. Should be a good event. Definitely. London says Bloom knows how to throw a party. My head spins in a complete 360. London said that? I croak. Why would London say that? She was telling me the other night that she's going to the wedding, with Nate, since Eli has to go out of town for work. Right. Bloom was here at Edge in the first place because of Nate, and now London is going to be at the wedding. But there will be no rogue kissing. Hell, how could there be? I'll be at the DJ booth, and she'll be with Nate, so I'll behave. It'll be easy. So damn easy. Then I'm looking forward to the wedding even more. I hastily add, since London said it'll be a good gig, that's why I'm looking forward to it. No other reason, of course. Archer tilts his head, his expression serious. But should I be looking for a new DJ? What? I jerk my head back. No. Why? He drags his palm across his forehead in exaggerated relief. Phew. Good. Because I don't want to lose you when you become the city's most sought-after wedding DJ. Finding a good DJ is harder than finding good dancers. A six-pack, some stage presence, and a few solid moves aren't hard to come by in this town. But someone with encyclopedic knowledge of tunes, who's quick on his feet with a quip and a comment? That's hard to replace. A smile breaks out. I'll be sticking around for a while. Especially since I want that raise, because bills. Maybe not forever, but for now. No worries there. Just trying to grow my side business at the same time. Makes sense. You want options for the long term. Just do me a favor. Sure, I say, hoping it's something I can deliver. Give me a heads up if anything changes, okay? So I can look for a replacement? That feels like the least I can do. Of course, I say, my shoulders relaxing. He gestures to his laptop. I've got a ton of work to finish before I go on this corporate camping retreat. I tilt my head. Corporate and camping? That sounds like an oxymoron. You're telling me I've got to work even later to go on an unplugged retreat about work. Maybe we'll eat nothing but jumbo shrimp. That's seriously funny. I see what you did there. Not bad, Teddy. But I'm sure I'll learn tons, so there's that. Let's at least hope the s'mores are good. There's always the s'mores. He nods toward the door. See you tomorrow. I take off. Grateful to be needed. Glad everything is all good. At home, I take Bowie for a long walk, checking out the science podcast London recommended. I learn about toasters and decide filaments are cool. When I go to bed, I chalk up a win. I've navigated another day without lusting over London. And, as if to prove myself to the universe, I text her, suggesting she meet me after my show at the station on Monday night so we can continue our strictly professional arrangement. Yep, I'm rocking this resistance, rocking it like Springsteen rocks, well, everything. I go full boss the next day, too, working out with Sam, catching up on the news, chatting with Sherry and Espanol, then listening to another episode of the Science Podcast. Before I head to the club, a fantastic email lands on my phone. One of the community groups I emailed needs a DJ for an awards ceremony, so I say yes and add that to my calendar for early next month. Finally, I head to the club for a raucous Saturday night. By the time midnight rolls around,
I've conducted a London detox. Pretty damn impressive. But when she texts me, my resistance gets up, walks out the door, and deserts me entirely. All that's left is my desire to get to know the most fascinating woman I've ever met. And to know her in every damn way.
Chapter 17. A few minutes earlier.
Emery. Just text him.
Olive. You know you want to.
London. You're such enablers.
You say that like it's a bad thing.
It is a bad thing, for many reasons. I told you the reasons.
Reasons, schmeasons. Besides, you have research to do.
And we do want to know if our theory holds up.
So I'm your lab rat?
You're too cute to be a lab rat. Also, I'm against animal testing.
Yes, me too.
Same. Obvs. But we don't want you to be a lab rat. We want you to be a lab woman who goes out and gets it, girl.
I mean, in your libido's defense, it's been a while.
So you're looking out for my sex life, or lack thereof?
I think that's quite a noble calling.
I concur. Now go forth and text, in the name of research.
I'll just text to say hi. That's all. I'm not texting for other reasons.
Whatever you need to tell yourself to sleep at night.
Enabler!
And you love it.
Chapter 18. After work, I melt into the couch with a bowl of dandan noodles, Bowie cuddled next to me. Just as I'm about to dive into this peanutty goodness, my phone vibrates in my pocket. It's a text. From London. After midnight. Okay, Teddy, relax, put the chopsticks down, and read the message. Hey, you. Maybe it's the hey, you that does it, the easy conversational vibe, but also the intimacy of it. Or maybe I'm reading too much into it. Or maybe I just like the woman too much for my own good. Hey to you, too. I hope it's not too late to text. I'm a night owl. Phew. Good. Did you just get off? My fingers move faster than my brain, and the text is on its way before I have a chance to second-guess myself. Yes, but I was thinking of you the whole time. But before I can castigate myself any further, a reply pops up on the screen. I was asking about work, but it's nice to hear you're thinking of me. I kind of can't stop thinking of her. Even when I was trying to, she was there in the back of my brain. Just checking in about Monday. Are we all set to meet at the station after your show? Sam is lined up to walk the dogs, so I'm good for the night. No need to rush. Dogs? I thought you just had Bowie. I do, but I walk my neighbor's dog when I can. Sherry is older and not as mobile as she used to be, so I try to give her Pooch some outdoor time. Aw, that's sweet of you. Sherry is awesome, and Bowie loves her beagle rescue Vin Scully, so it all works out. I'm guessing you're being modest here. You sound like you might be a, gasp, good guy. And what leads you to that conclusion? Rescue pity? Check. Helping little old lady neighbors? Check. Likes his parents? Check. Adds up to a good guy. I repeat the text out loud, then look at David Bowie. Does she think being a good guy is bad, buddy? Did I miss a memo? Bowie offers his belly, but no advice. Typical. I give him a scratch, since he asked nicely. Like a good guy. I take a bite of the noodles, hoping she's not one of those women who likes jerks. But that doesn't track with her. Time to throw down the simple truth. Sure, I'll own it. Good guy and proud of it. I thought you might be. We were having a debate about good guys versus bad boys at our board game night. I'll bite. What was the debate? Also, who's we? Emery, Olive, Eli, Nate, and myself. You met the guys already, and I told you about my gals. Olive's the married one who loves audiobooks. I'm pretty sure she uses them as foreplay for the sex she and her motorcycle-riding tattoo artist of a hubby have every night. His name's Hawk, so he couldn't be anything but a bad boy. Emery has a penchant for smooth-talking suits who turn out to be secretly married. I'm trying to cure her of that. And so are Nate and Eli. They're all for good guys, because they, wait for it, are good guys. Also, I'm pretty sure they have sex twice a day. I show the text to Bowie. We're talking sex now. That's promising, right? He thumps his tail. Wait, shit. No, I shouldn't talk sex with a woman I want to have sex with, but can't have sex with. But that's like taunting a dog with a tennis ball and not throwing it for him. Like a dog, I chase it. Good for them. Seems like the key to happiness. Yes, seems to be. You met them. They're the happiest people I know. Scientific studies have shown happiness is a byproduct of sex on the reg. Twice daily, in fact. I do believe I've seen those studies, too. Blushing face emoji. But here's the thing. Uh-oh. Like its cousin, but nothing good ever comes after here's the thing. I jump on the grenade. Here's the thing what? Good sex is better than ice cream? That depends on the ice cream. Depends on the sex. That may be true, but what I was saying is this. Emery and Olive, already worldwide before they even hit 30, claimed that only bad boys are good in bed. And good guys are, what, awesome, incredible, fucking amazing, way better than bad boys? I hope you defended the honor of good guys in bed. She's silent. Well, text silent. But the dots are moving. Then they stop. Come on, London. I look at Bowie. What do you think, buddy? On the one paw, she mentioned sex. On the other paw, she thinks I might be bad at it. He says nothing, but I know what he's thinking. We can't let this happen. Fuck it. I can't wait for her response. I keep going. I can't believe you'd allow your friends to talk trash about good guys. I didn't say I agreed with them. I don't want to agree with them. But I have no empirical data, Teddy. You've never been with a good guy? Please don't tell me you like jerks or assholes. My last boyfriend was sort of nice enough, and honestly, before that, I mostly dated, well, not nice guys. Let's leave it at that. So you don't actually have any data to draw from? I don't. Isn't that terrible? Awful. I bet you wanted to contribute your insight to the debate. I so did. Especially because Olive said it's a scientific fact that nice guys are bad in bed. Olive is wrong. She said it's Newton's fourth law of thermodynamics. A man can be two of these, but never all three. Hot, nice, good in bed. And you're obviously hot, and now I'm finding out you're nice, so... Damn, it feels good to hear her call me hot. But she's leaving those ellipses dangling on the end of that text like a gauntlet thrown at my feet. I'm so caught up in this moment, so caught up in her, that I picked that glove right up. Sounds a bit more like a hypothesis than a law to me. Hmm, good point. And hypotheses do need to be tested. Did you have an experiment in mind? The kind where we'd need to run multiple tests to ensure the accuracy of our results? I do like the sound of multiples. Me too. I'm burning up everywhere. I head to the refrigerator to grab a seltzer because this interaction with London requires a cool down. I return to the couch, staring at the screen. The ball is in my court. This feels like a challenge. The good guy challenge. And I'm not sure I can refuse it. But am I ready to throw my personal rules and guidelines out the window? I flash back to Archer and our conversation last night. I flash forward to tomorrow and the wedding. The wedding London's attending, too. I groan, wanting her and wanting to resist her. Which side will win? I don't have a clue. All I know is I can't wait to see her again. See you tomorrow at the wedding. I'll be the guy with the headphones on, resisting rogue kissing the prettiest woman there. I'll be the girl resisting rogue kissing the DJ. After all, we made a pact, and I'm going to do my damnedest to honor it. Chapter 19. The first thing I do when I'm out of bed the next morning is check my texts, feeling a little like Bowie nudging his nose in the dog food bowl in the early AM, hoping kibble will magically appear. But there aren't any new texts from the city's sexiest woman. So my guy and I hit the trails for a morning hike.
An hour, several checks of my phone, and some hard-earned sweat later, I understand my dog a whole lot more. Staring at the dog food bowl, Ken reap rewards. Because check this out. I'm the lucky recipient not only of a text from London, but a video file. Lifting my face to the sky, I offer a silent prayer to all the dirty gods and goddesses. Let this be a video of her stripping down to nothing. Wait. Nope. That's so uncouth of me. Truth is, I'd be happy to watch a video of London brushing her teeth. As soon as that thought hits my brain, another one slams into it like one car rear-ending another. You've got it bad for this woman if you want to see her brushing her teeth. Shaking my head at my runaway thoughts, I mutter, no shit, self. Also, fuck off. Fresh breath is cool. Right, Bowie? My furry friend tilts his head, his tongue lolling out. Good, I say as I make my way down the final bend in the trail, clicking open the video clip. And happy Sunday morning to me. This is way better than good dental hygiene. London. I'm in the studio this morning, feeling all kinds of inspired. Here's what I have so far for Come As You Are. What do you think? At the foot of the trail, I hit play. My jaw drops. London drags a hand down her chest, pops her hip to the left, to the right, lets her head fall back, her hair trailing down her back as she moves to the music. What do I think? I think I might come as I am. I reply, change nothing, not a single fucking thing. Then I pat myself on the back because I'm so damn focused on this work project with her, and only on the work project. Bloom's nuptials are not my first wedding. I've spun at plenty before tonight, not as many as I'd like. Edge keeps me pretty busy on the weekends, and those are the prime coupling days. A few months ago, though, I did get to DJ for some friends who were high school sweethearts and got hitched in their early 20s. Late last year, I was in charge of the tunes at the reception for a couple of Sam's buddies. My mom also hooked me up with one of her book club friends, who met the love of her life at her 25th high school reunion, and the sheer number of 80s songs to which they got their groove on made for a hell of a night. What's not to love about being at a wedding? An entire day devoted to celebrating love while surrounded by family and friends? An opportunity to meld two separate worlds into a larger, richer community? Sign me up. But this is the most fun wedding I've DJed by far. Bloom's friends love to dance. They shake and shimmy to every song, with Nate and London busting out the moves. But I haven't seen her for the last hour. Not that I'm clock watching. Besides, I'm in the zone, lasered in on spinning tunes and only on spinning tunes. The lady of the evening bounces over to the DJ booth. This is Bloom's first break from the dance floor since she and her hubs cut the cake, and the bride is absolutely glowing.
Insomnia, you are a certified rock star and an official lifesaver. I've had more compliments on the music than I can count. I'm leaving you the best 5-star review in the history of the internet.
What more can a guy ask for? Not much. 5-star reviews are up there with blowjobs and tacos. Not always in that order, of course. I've had some pretty righteous tacos.
Can I pass out a few of these?
Bloom asks, motioning toward a small stack of business cards on the table. A few, a lot, all of them, whatever works for you. And thank you. I appreciate it. I shoot her a huge grin, then throw on my headphones to fade to the next track. As a Michael Jackson number shifts into Tina Turner, I sneak a peek and find the other reason why I like this wedding. Fine, fine, I've been checking her out all night. But there's nothing wrong with enjoying the view, especially when the brunette beauty heads in my direction. She walks over to my DJ setup in perfect rhythm to Tina's smoky wailing. God bless tight tops. London's decked out in a light blue dress with a scoop neck thing that makes it impossible to look away from her tits, which are bouncing slightly with each step. The dress hits her knees, proper enough for a wedding, but sexy enough to absolutely drive me crazy wondering what she's wearing underneath. Shaking away those thoughts of blue lingerie, white lingerie, red lingerie that matches her glasses, hell, any color lingerie,
I shoot her a cocky glare.
You just can't stay away from me, I say, heat and challenge in my tone.
I know. It's impossible. I tried.
How hard? How hard did you try to stay away?
So hard, she teases. I tried to go on ignoring you for the whole wedding, but I caved just now.
Glad you did. You having fun?
I'm having a blast, but I had to duck out for the last hour. Nate and I both forgot to bring the wedding gift, so I just ran back to their place to grab it.
That must have been a really important gift.
She leans in closer and stage whispers,
It's an Instant Pot.
She sets the wrapped cube down on the edge of my table.
That is important. Some people think the rings make a marriage official,
but it's actually the Instant Pot. London finishes my joke, and we share a flirty look.
One that spurs me on.
London, why don't you just admit you came to the wedding to see me? She narrows her eyes, pointing at my chest. You crashed the wedding, she teases. Nate asked me to be his date a week ago.
If you say so, I toss back.
She crosses her arms. Just admit you took the job so you could see me.
Fine, fine. I wanted to watch you dance. You caught me.
Knew it.
I shouldn't like flirting with her because of work, because of my past, because of her brother. But when I'm around London, she has a way of derailing all rational and irrational thought. I have a way of forgetting everything else, like promises I made to myself. And if I stay in the flirting zone too long, I may lose higher brain function entirely, and I need that for work. Maybe she's wary of the fine line between flirty and fun, too, since she changes the topic to an innocuous one.
So, what's your favorite wedding song ever?
I go with it, since I'm still on the clock. Uptown Funk by Bruno Mars has to be a pretty strong contender. That always gets the people moving. But it's also not a wedding without a little Unchained melody.
The Righteous Brothers' second best song.
True. What would Top Gun be after all without You've Lost That Lovin' Feelin'? But that's probably not the best title for a wedding song.
Maybe the worst title ever for a wedding song.
Music is great, but her laughter is quickly becoming my favorite sound.
How about if you had to dance to one song at a wedding? What would it be?
What are we talking here? Slow dance, fast dance, group dance?
DJ's choice.
Slow dance definitely goes to At Last, Etta James classic.
And what if you wanted to speed it up a bit?
Well, I have a confession to make. I'm an awful fast dancer, I admit, sheepishly.
That's a shame.
Why's that?
I love the fast tunes. If you throw on any Usher or Queen Bee, you can't keep me off the dance floor,
she says, tossing her gaze toward the sway of bodies. But I barely notice the guests, because my head swims with memories of London dancing downtown the other day, and on my phone this morning. I can't stop my eyes from traveling the length of her curvaceous body. I don't want to stop them on their voyeuristic journey up her legs, around her hips, to the dangerous dip of her dress that exposes just a hint of freckles scattered across the top of her breasts. That's definitely something I would love to see, so have at it any time. I like the idea of dancing with her a lot, so I lean in closer and whisper, I do kill it at the slow dancing, though.
You don't say.
I don't mean to brag, but I was voted best male lead at Cotillion in 7th and 8th grade, so... I leave the sentence hanging with a smile.
In that case, I should probably check out this award-winning slow dancing, for the sake of hypotheses that need to be tested.
Yes, you should conduct all the experiments. That is, if you insist. She adopts a serious expression.
I do insist. I need to run my own research. Corruption in the Cotillion circuit is well documented.
I'm about to offer to spin her around on the dance floor for a number when a loud, bright voice hits my ears.
London!
Bloom exclaims as she makes her way to us, then tugs at London's arm.
My bridesmaids are demanding an epic dancer, and you're an epic dancer, so your presence is requested on the floor.
London's smile takes over her face.
Then we must dance all night long.
Bloom glances my way, then at London, then at me again. Something sparks in her eyes.
But don't you worry. I'll let you return to flirting with this handsome musical Jedi very soon. Come dance.
With a sexy shrug that says she's following the flirting orders from on high, London's eyes travel in my direction. Exactly where I want them. I fade in to Usher's Yeah, and as the beat drops hard and fast, Bloom and London bound to the dance floor to a chorus of cheers from the other guests. As London dances, her eyes keep meeting mine. I know exactly what she's thinking. Same thing I am. Looks like we both want to break the rogue kissing pact. Chapter 20. 2 hours of celebratory revelry later, London is still here with a few lingering guests. The crowd is thinned, and several centerpieces are conspicuously absent. Past a sea of half-empty champagne glasses and partially eaten cake slices, London stands at the edge of the dance floor, fingers toying with her bracelets, looking like the heroine at the end of a wedding sequence in a movie. Fade in on the candlelight from the tables flickering off her cheeks, the party lights sparkling through her wavy hair. Her soulful brown eyes lock right on me. She walks over to me.
All right, DJ, let's test those slow dancing skills.
All in the name of science, I say a little huskily because my throat is dry from looking at her. I hit play on End of the Road. I'm a hopeful guy tonight, and I've had this track ready and waiting for London's invitation. Boys to Men floats across the warm evening air. I head in her direction and wrap my arms around this beautiful woman, bringing her close. Another couple sways together several feet away, but as far as I'm concerned, my whole world begins and ends on this tiny corner of the dance floor. This space where I have zero worries about work and career and a future. There is no room for anything here but her and me and how we fit. Did Nate leave?
Yes, he went out with some friends.
That answer tells me everything. She's not leaving with him. And my body replies, I want her to go home with me. London leans her head against my shoulder and I catch a heady whiff of the citrusy scent that makes me dizzy with want. I breathe her in as our bodies come together, drawn closer by this night, this song. The rest of the guests, most long gone now, were drunk on Prosecco and gin. I'm intoxicated by this woman. We don't speak. This moment doesn't need words. With the palm trees rustling from a soft evening breeze and the stage lights mingling with the starlight, we move together, her arms looped around my neck. Both my hands cup her sculpted ass, because where else would I rest my hands, and I pull back slightly so I can look at her face. Hard to look anyplace else. This must be my lucky day.
Why's that?
She asks, her eyes all soft and glossy. Accidentally booked a dream gig, the event went off without a hitch, and now I'm dancing with a gorgeous, clever, irresistible woman alone on the dance floor? Furtively, London glances around, tipping her chin to the other couple enjoying the last song of the night.
Technically, we're not alone, Teddy.
You want to bust me on a technicality? Or should we consider it within the scientific margin of error, or whatever you call it?
Science and science geeks can only explain so much.
Maybe I'm your lucky charm. She whispers against my neck. Luck. Is this luck? Or is it want, making me reckless? The club, my relationship with my boss, my burgeoning business, all are at stake. And yet, as I slide my hands up her back, the last thoughts of Archer and my career slink off into the night like the final note of a song fading to silence. I run my thumb across her cheek in a gentle caress. She gasps, and with that sexy sound, I give all the way in. I'm not immune to weddings, to slow songs, to flickering strands of lights and warm breezes. Maybe you are a good luck charm. I should call you lucky. A grin tugs at her lips.
Did I just get a nickname?
Seems you did.
better seal it with a kiss. And because that is the next step of this dance routine, we kiss. As my lips slide across hers, the moment becomes stronger than me, stronger than my desire to play by the rules and go by the book. Her body melts into mine, and her lips part for me, inviting me in to kiss deeper, harder, and for longer. But longer would be better someplace else. Once our lips separate and we lock eyes, I make a choice.